Welcome to the Apton Podcast. I'm here with Graham Brennan from A&I Connects.
How are you?
Doing very well. So we're here at the London Chamber of Commerce up in Queen Street in London, and we're here to talk about A&I Connects, public engagement, what does it mean, a little bit about Graham's background and his journey into starting the business and generally becoming an entrepreneur. So Graham, do you want to give a little bit of background about yourself, who you are and what you've been doing?
Yeah, sure. I suppose officially I'm a former academic who's got into a business world and entrepreneurial kind of mindset in the last couple of years. My background is pretty much public engagement through public health. So I was doing that for a few years up in Scotland. And really looking at kind of how public engagement for public health works.
So could you just step back a little bit? What do you mean by public engagement?
Yeah, sure. So I guess within the context of public health first, it's essentially how the audiences that are relevant to, say, a health intervention, the type of things that Macmillan Cancer Support run, you know, right. The things that they put on a whole lot of opportunities in the community to come and get engaged in physical activity interventions, for example, so walking groups and things like that. The engagement of their public, the audience that they want to come and get involved, that's the whole process of how to identify who's relevant to those programs, how to communicate to them, how they message them and see what the response level is, and how they essentially get people in the door to take part in these offers that they have out there. That's the concept of public engagement that I was sort of immersed in public health.
So actually, just to kind of touch on that a little bit,
How
sophisticated were people in the public health sector? Because I would assume, obviously, government health or even charities are not always top of the list when it comes to using either technology or measuring things, KPIs. A lot of them just, charities I've worked with previously, much time is spent on gaining revenue, getting the donations in, and then obviously they're still doing the good work, but there's not often times where the two correlate, right?
Yeah. That's a really fair observation, and to kind of set the tone at start, like, they are brilliant at what they do, and they are excellent providers of services, and they come with the best of intentions to deliver something that is, you know, supportive for people in very, sometimes very extreme situations with their health or very kind of diverse backgrounds in terms of what they face. But yeah, in terms of how they organize their resources and the tools that they use or the approach that they take, that was the motivation for the PhD I ended up doing. And that's how I really kind of streamed into public health. And it was because there were gaps there. There were gaps in maybe their knowledge, there were gaps in methodologies, there were gaps in how they approached the entire process of public engagement with their audience, by comparison to somebody like a business or a service provider in a completely different industry that was very tech savvy, that was very kind of driven by different outcomes that they were looking for, different KPIs that indicated success as a business. And gaining funding for a charitable endeavor really is about making sure that the charity survives to deliver something that boosts a person's health. It's not really about profitability at the end of the day. It's a fairly obvious statement, but it means that their processes sometimes are about striving and surviving rather than kind of excelling.
So you mentioned the word processes. So looking at A&I Connect's website, you know, you're very much process driven. Finish your story.
That was the driver for what became my PhD. I was in Scotland. I was doing a research placement. I was doing a master's in health promotion in Ireland, and I was very, very fascinated in the broader kind of interest in public health from the public's perspective. You know, how people got involved in things that helped them gain control over their own health outcomes. That's sort of the definition of health and health promotion. I was very interested in how people became aware of things that were around the corner, but blind to some people because they just literally weren't on their radar. But then once they were aware of them, sort of what actually was the interest in them, you know, like what made something really popular and a trend versus something that is equally beneficial but just wasn't attended. So while I was in Scotland, there's, you know, chatting away to the researchers I was working with there, and they said, look, you know, that's a really big agenda for us because we're good at what we do. We develop these really, really good health interventions. They're launched in the community. They're funded by NHS Health Scotland and various other funders. But if they're not attended, we sort of have a double loss. We're using public funded, publicly funded resources, we're using public money, and we're trying to deliver to an audience that would benefit the most from being involved in these things, but the disconnect is they're not turning up, so we want somebody to look at it. So that started my PhD, and I think initially everybody thought I was either going to find that there was a magic bullet out there somewhere, that I would just validate Twitter as being the be-all and end-all for everything. I think that was it. They kind of thought I would come up with the one-hit wonder solution. But my background and my interest and my kind of philosophy on it was very different to that, and it was process-driven. And it was about sort of looking and going, well, you know, there isn't a be-all and end-all. You know, there isn't a one channel for kind of connecting with and convincing somebody to get involved. But there's different things that influences, that influence opinion and attention and put things on people's radar depending on, you know, their motivations, their interests, their awareness, their exposure to what's going on, their previous experience, and then your capacity to actually deliver something beyond being brilliant at what you do, but then running the broader processes that connects to you, putting on a great intervention, but communicating that out. So rather than looking at it as finding a needle in a haystack, I kind of looked at the haystack and said, what puts this together in a really good way by comparison to something beside it that just isn't working out so well?
So in a way, is that looking at the end game first?
Yeah.
And then moving, walking back from that?
Yeah, pretty much the logic model approach to it, yeah. Kind of looking, and that really aligns then, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the business side of things in a while, but that aligns with looking at KPIs and looking at what you want to see as being the change at the end, and then what series events lead to it. And for me, that was my philosophy to it. Like, it was, what's the outcome we're actually looking for, but what leads to that outcome, instead of like, what can we throw out there and then just see what happens. And yeah, big 3.5 year chunk of research and PhD and trying to convince everybody around me that it wasn't about one thing, and right, there was a number of components, and that's what led to ANI and why that's a structure and a process rather than a method and a simple solution.
So did you just start that straight after your PhD?
It was what emerged from the PhD and throughout it. As I said, we were looking, I think everybody was looking for a single solution, and I was doing a series of research studies. I was looking at the literature. So I did a massive study of the literature that was out there. Researchers who said, here's a research paper that discusses engagement. Now they call it recruitment, and this is where everything gets very confusing, because the concept of recruitment outside of research is a very, very different thing. But if we say their equivalent of recruitment is public engagement,
right.
They said these research studies are all about this process. So here's all the knowledge that we have. And it kind of boils down to a load of missing information. I had a massive data set. It was a systematic review rather than a literature review. So you started with a question and literally said, of the research, where is the answer to this specific question? And a valid outcome from that is, well, it turns out there's not actually much that contributes to the answer. So it's worth looking at this with a need to contribute something that can answer that question, because right now we're not informed enough from what's out there. And sometimes it's sort of like saying the absence of evidence is there at the moment, so let's see if we can approach this differently so we provide some evidence.
And
that was a really important finding, really, that papers that said they were about this process aren't reporting their process. They kind of streamline into some other topic of conversation. They'll revert back to saying that this is a great intervention, and it's a great intervention. Mm-hmm. They'll cling on to a statistic, and that's a very valid statistic. But if I wanted to be a guidance to what I do next, the guidance wasn't there. And that was very interestingly followed up by work that I was doing with practitioners in the community. So those very people who were informed by the research studies to go and put it into action in the community and face that same challenge of nobody coming in the door, if you like. And their demand was for guidance, and their pressures were time, and their pressures were resources, and their pressures were higher level requirements that weren't going to be fulfilled if people didn't come in the door. And this is all in the context of doing fantastic work and trying to provide an amazing opportunity to somebody who would benefit from it, but then it leaks into the world of sort of business running as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is what every business is going through. I mean, exactly. We're going through, we all go through this, and two businesses we run are completely like that.
Yeah.
I think everyone I talk to is trying to figure out how do we, a lot of what we're talking about in previous podcasts are things like product market fit, knowing your audience, knowing your customer, all this kind of stuff. And a lot of times you don't really know them until they start arriving.
Yeah.
And when they arrive, you kind of wonder why are these guys signing up and not the guys I thought were signing up.
And that's a really fascinating part of it as well. And it's important to sort of understand the connection. That's why the theme of the whole thing is connection. Because that connection between practitioners and they're turning back to researchers who were equally fantastic at what they did but didn't have a guidance structure to provide them. And then the practitioner is saying, we need a guidance structure or we're going to terminate as an entity, but we have a whole load of expertise as well that isn't captured. And that became the theme. You know, the researchers weren't capturing their brilliance. The practitioners weren't able to capture their brilliance because they were their time and resources were demanded elsewhere. And I kind of said, okay, well, one of the big gaps is the absence of evidence, but it's not for the lack of skill and insight. So let me start getting some information outside of what's written down as to what's actually working, or step back and see what the evidence that is there is actually indicating. And the first two parts of the A&I model kind of came out. A heavy dependence on awareness was the theme of the researchers. The default setting was look for the silver bullet. Let's find and use the current version of Twitter and let's just do it until it's exhausted and it'll partially work. And sometimes it'll be great and it'll solve all problems, but it's not replicable. It's not a system you can kind of roll out and you can kind of hand over very simply. It was often a bit of chance, or it resulted in people who would turn up that would be there anyway. So it wasn't reaching the kind of health agenda, which was there are people who this is not reaching at all. They're the harder to reach by definition of them not being there and it being a challenge. And that's not doing everything for you. So if just doing awareness ticks all the boxes. I've said this loads of times, if you're really popular, if you're the Rolling Stones in 1970s New York and you've already got a following and a demand, people know all about you, just put up a poster and people will see it and they'll turn up, and that's absolutely fine and you can stop. But if that's not the scenario for you and if that's not the outcome, what the practitioners were starting to tell me was, look, you know, you have to be in the places that are relevant to that audience. You have to know your audience, you have to identify your audience, and there can be other audiences that get involved, but if you're charged with trying to find a specific person or group of people, do the practical, you know, be in the place that they, you know, exist, and then do the kind of the relationship building, you know, understand how they perceive you to be and understand who can kind of bridge that gap between you if there's a big difference in how you're perceived.
So if we take this into the context of business and startups at least, one of the issues you have when you're starting up a business or developing a product or a service or whatever it is that you in your head have an idea of who that service is for or that product is for, but in reality, it may not be that at all. So you kind of end up spending time and money and resources, whatever it is, chasing people who really aren't that interested when you could have gone down another path, but of course it was that, again, in a sense, it's an absence of evidence, but not quite that. It's just the fact that you don't know these people exist, you know that these people exist, and you think that they're the ones who should be. Yeah. But actually there's a big chunk of other people out there that could be using your product or will be interested in your product, you just don't know about them.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of comes down to, there's like a couple of themes that really kind of come out of just what you said there. One is the general sense. You know, the generalizability of what you do, or the generalizability of a way to engage your market, or just that general world. There's a big population of people out there. If half of that audience engage with what I'm doing, I'll be a huge success. I just need to get it out. I just need to expose it. And then surely the if we build it, they will come philosophy approach will evolve. And that I've uttered then a fantastically famous movie that I can't think of, Field of Dreams. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in a way for businesses, certainly, for them to be efficient and effective enough that their budget doesn't run out and they don't fold and they're not under huge, sometimes unnecessary pressure. But in identifying, that's such a frequent thing that I come across, identifying your audience, at least your perceived audience, and really, really specifying that. Because that's your first indicator of whether or not you have any engagement success. Is the audience that you think your product is for actually present or not? And if the first check is that, if they're not present, and the first check is, well, Why are they not present? Is it A, it turns out this product is absolutely not for them, I was just completely wrong? That's one set of circumstances, and that can be addressed, and you can look for either the case that it really wasn't a product that anybody's going to use, in which case fail early and just get away from it, and that's fine. Or it turns out you misidentified the user for it, and through the process you might identify other users.
So how do you know that though? That's a key question there. Really.
Well, I guess before thinking about that, like, the other check really is the reason that they're not there because there's a massive disconnect between the way that you're putting your, you know, you're publicizing yourself, you're trying to engage your audience. Is there a massive disconnect between what you're doing to put the word out there and either how they would hear about it or what they perceive to be the thing that you're describing? You know, is there a massive disconnect in their head between where they hear about the messages, who kind of gives messages to them, and whether or not they listen to those? And then the follow-on of being, is this actually for me? And I think in terms of that second question, sorry to have interrupted, but I think the first thing is to not be on the back foot. I mean, in terms of what like is good evidence of something that works in terms of my background and in research and so on, it really is a process of evolution of a product and then testing it, putting it out there.
So here's a question for you in that sense. So when you're launching, again, a new product or service and you've got your messaging out there and you've spent a lot of time thinking, okay, this is the wording I need to have, this is the messaging, this is the kind of, not necessarily the brand image, but really the marketing piece of it all, you know, how long should you stick with that until you, you know, decide that this is actually not working, I need to go and do something? Because there could be lots of different reasons why it's not working.
Yeah.
The messaging could be right, but you could be saying it in the wrong place, right?
Yeah.
So how do you kind of balance that one out?
That's a great question. And actually, I'll maybe talk later about this lady, this amazingly insightful lady in Glasgow, taught me loads of lessons on how you actually discuss and describe what you're doing. But in terms of the how long is a piece of string question, which I guess is sort of what you're asking, how long does it take Facebook to generate whatever number of leads and actually convert them? I try to address it completely different. Well, just reverse it. I try to address it from, instead of the how long does it take question, I try to say, okay, look, what's your significant milestone that you're moving towards? You know, is there a launch date? Is there a cutoff point? Is there a seasonal milestone that you're working towards? And then say, that is a fixed period of time. Within this fixed period of time, what capacity and resources have you got that you can execute in an orderly fashion? And from doing that, what can you learn is working? What can you learn is too much of an expenditure? What can you learn is actually a decent return on investment? And what can you actually gain and glean from being perhaps a little bit less reactionary and under stress to being a little bit, even possibly scaled down, but just selecting the things that you have the capacity to actually execute with a little bit of insight, a little bit of kind of structure and a little bit of evidence that informs, you know, sort of this before this or this then that kind of logic to it. And instead of giving it, you know, lots of lag time and so on, because some things will have lots of lag time and that's fair enough, but instead of going, how long will this take? Just say, okay, what can I reasonably do within a fixed period of time? What have I got capacity to do and what can I plan to do? And then you're breaking it down into bite-sized chunks. Then you're making it manageable. Then you're making it about goal setting. Then you're making it about multiple voices that are informing you, this is a manageable process or not. This is a realistic plan or not. This is actually, you know, giving me a response rate or not. But it then gives you the time to be the real opportunity to be pragmatic and flexible. Like actually pragmatic, actually kind of to be able to change your approach based on understanding what you've been able to do in a fixed period of time and what that's given you back. So it's just making it, because I think the most common theme that I get,
this goes back to your structure and processes, right?
Yeah, it really does. And again, that was driven not by an obsession by me by any means, but you do enough years in this as a way to call yourself a doctor and you have to come up with some structure. But but it was really about sort of looking at, again, that point I made at the very start, that the people who are doing these things, whether it's in charities or businesses, they're generally really brilliant at what they do. And they can be really insightful and really fascinating to talk about their product and stuff. But if there's a gap in that same way, I kind of reveal this absence of evidence, if there's a gap in what I might do for them tomorrow if I was to come in and take the job of public engagement or marketing for them, if there's no script to follow, if there's no background of what happened the last time, if there's no set of instructions to from everything from your administration level to your kind of management level, then you are back to asking, well, how long is a piece of string? And that's not very encouraging. It's not very confidence building. There's no clarity in it, and it means you're reactionary and you're under stress. And there's always a volume of work to be done. I try to say, well, look, let's do that volume of work, but let's give you the upper hand with some structure.
So I guess one of the other points that comes out of this is speed, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of startups, they want to act quickly. And obviously when you talk about reactionary, you know, see something's not quite right, then change it and pivot and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So do you kind of recommend that you spend more time building up your process, or your process and sales methodology, whatever it is, and then going to market once you have that clear plan of attack, rather than trying to just do everything on the fly when you're out there?
A bit of a halfway middle point solution, really, in a way. One of the common kind of pushbacks I get when I talk about this to every audience, really, it's a consistent theme, is I don't quite have the time to start sitting down and making plans now. You know, I've already opened the stable doors and things are already flying. So I need to just come up with something quick and get on with it. And when I step back and kind of look at it with perspective, you kind of say, well, look, you've been doing that, you know, and that's the legacy of a lot of businesses, that, you know, the 50% failure rate in the first year and 85% in the first 3 years because they don't generate enough customers. If you continue to do that, the likely outcome is more stress. And even if you hit the nail on the head, you're not going to be able to replicate it. So in terms of sitting down and doing some planning, it's actually quite a quick process once you do have a structure to follow. And by doing what I was mentioning earlier on, giving yourself fixed time points and scaling down to what's manageable to you and what's relevant with some guidance and some evidence. And that's why this is, I think for me, the USP is that it's evidence-based. You actually allow people to put a bit of considered time into a plan and a process that is informed, that is structured, and it's cut to their cloth and their needs. And then just let them go. You know, you can go, there's a lot of things you can just automate. There's a lot of things you can kind of let happen on a frequent basis that are just creating your awareness stuff. But you can then also go, well, look, if I've automated that and that has a fixed amount of time per week and a fixed labor cost and so on, what am I doing in the other days? Now, I can't do everything, but let's see if there's something really specific and really relevant that follows on, that goes down what I kind of outlined as being a continuum. Build my awareness. So the signposts are out there, people know I exist. Now there's network spaces I can go to. There is a key person, there's a key location, there is a key group that I need to make sure I actually am relevant to by going and learning from their insight back to me as well. But I need to maybe go and specifically pick a place to head to. And you can factor that in. And that can be a quality network, an opportunity, or a quality partnering within a fixed period of time. And then once you're there, and this is where the eye comes in, the interpersonal. What are you actually saying? Like, how are you describing what it is that you're doing? What's the key messaging that's consistent between you and the audience that you're speaking to? And as you speak to that audience, the way they're reacting, what they're saying back to you, the questions that they're asking back to you, the conversation, the detail they want to know, are you making sure that you're grasping all of that response to refine the message as you go forward? And then just feed that back. Feed that back to the network spaces and places that you're represented. Feed that back to the very passive awareness stuff that you're using. So the model kind of feeds itself on. So when you're not the Rolling Stones, but you're my friend's local band and you're playing the pubs that are popular for gigs, and somebody says, oh, who do they sound like, or are they any good? The conversation is about their style of music. The conversation is about whether they're good or not based on evidence. And change it from being a band to being your product, change it from your product to being charity. There's just this incredible consistency in how those features of people need to know you exist. If you're relevant in the network space and the place that you're looking to kind of filter into, then, you know, be proactive and be there and have the meaningful conversation. And be aware as well that a non-response is a response. It's an indication that either that arrow has missed the target completely, or the, you know, the message that was pinned to it just didn't quite, you know, wasn't quite clear or understood.
So let's talk about ANI Connect.
Yeah.
So obviously ANI means something. Do you want to talk a little bit about the ANI piece?
Yeah, so that is A, awareness, N, networks, and I, interpersonal communication. And the theory, I suppose, that it represents, kind of represents, I suppose, a theory, a model, and the work that I do. And from the theoretical perspective, it's that your engagement is more efficient and it's more effective if these key elements are present. So if people know you exist, that's the awareness component, which I've just mentioned. So everything I've just mentioned, the awareness component, the making sure you're in a network space and you're relevant in that network space and you're well able to describe what it is that you do. So if those elements are present, you've got more likelihood to be efficient and effective with your engagement. But it breaks down as a model as well in terms of the structure of it, because awareness building activities and methods are very very specific. There's very specific things that you can label as being purely awareness building. So, you know, building a website, just a static sitting homepage, that's an awareness building activity. Putting a poster up and everything that kind of represents something that is just putting you on people's radar, that's awareness building. And then network side of things, everything from networking with groups to identifying where the hubs of the people that you're looking for and where you kind of position your business and where you operate, that's your networking aspect of it. And things that you can do underneath that go from literally your networking skills to locating where you actually position your business and locate your business, and then identifying the groups that are relevant to you. So you're making sure you're going in via, you know, the people who open the doors to those groups and the mediators and the representatives and the influencers and so on, that you are creating relationships so that your messaging can be channeled quite efficiently to those groups. So rather than sitting in London and trying to, you know, sell a business to somebody in Manchester and everything that's involved in it, actually locating yourself in Manchester with something that requires your presence in that area. Equally, if you require a relevant presence online, being in the groups and the social media and the blog spaces and the websites and everything that represents like an online hub, actually being there, you know. So anybody remember MySpace? But MySpace used to exist.
Yeah. Right. So if someone wants to engage with you, what do they expect? What should they expect from you?
So I guess at the moment, like I'm sitting between my old audience, my kind of academia kind of background, and my charity work, or work with charities, which is essentially an extension of business, and then branching into working on a consultancy basis with businesses who are established in their own right. And really the process of working with me is initially a diagnostic of kind of where you're at. What's your need? What's your experience? What's your capacity? What's your resources? What's your intentions? Who are your audience? What are your goals over a fixed period of time? And kind of really allowing you to get some perspective with that. And then seeing where there's deficits, and then seeing where the A&I model works to maybe fill a gap, focused entirely on your marketing and public engagement processes, and how other things that might potentially slow that down. So if there's some background work to do, maybe in identifying the audience, or I had a client I was working with recently, and you know, the guy is suffering from success because he's great. You know, he's like actually got a lot more customers than he intended to have,
right?
But he's not quite clear on how to manage them. But also his business itself can't quite deliver everything he needs to deliver. So I could draw an amazing marketing plan for him if he wanted, but he can't execute on it because he can't quite fulfill all of the work requirements. So I kind of pull that back and say, well, look, that's going to kill any marketing you do. So in the context of broader intentions with public engagement, you need to make sure you're delivering what you know, you're living up to the on sale test.
Mm.
So let's get this function of your business absolutely sorted out so we can really continue to execute on the popularity of what you're doing, but also give you a manageable structure that will allow you to keep on doing that without having to do something that's distractionary. You know, you had people come along and saying, you need to make a video of yourself every single week and put it up online. I'm like, if you want to win an Oscar, yeah, absolutely, but you don't need that right now. What you need to do is focus on what's going to continue to engage your future audience for your current audience by executing really well. So some of it is assessment of kind of what's going on with the functions of the business or whoever it is that's in front of me. And then once we've designed an action plan informed by the A&I structure and it's manageable for them, I kind of sit with them as a support, a background kind of support consultant to help them implement it. See it being implemented as an action plan that they can record, you know, how much of it they could actually put into play, what was easy, what was difficult, what actually turned out to be fruitful and not. And then I dial back in on a regular basis, say, right, well, now we're doing an evaluation, so we are creating your own evidence,
sure,
of what's working.
So do you work with any size of business?
Yeah, kind of. I'm also sort of refining that, I guess, as well for myself. You know, you kind of come from an academic background, you want to sort of give everything away for free and be TED Talk specialist,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And definitely in the last kind of couple of years of excuse me, of developing a business for myself as well. You know, you sort of realize that where I can still do that, that'll be great. You know, I can operate with charities via funders, but where I need to obviously see a business success as well is making sure that my clients are ready to execute on something that is more than just a top tip,
sure,
half hour chat. Like,
so how did you find the transition from academia to the business world?
Really interesting, because I guess I've sort of always been in the real world of what I was doing anyway. So before I did my PhD, well, actually even during my PhD, because that those two audiences I described earlier, the researchers who need to be good at, you know, making the research more successful, and the practitioners who took that research and put it into the really real world, because I sat between the two of them, I was always drawn in both of those directions anyway. Academics have very different interests in what you produce from a study that you do versus what I was saying earlier with the practitioners who go,
sure,
yeah, great, we trust you, brilliant, but how do I actually turn this into something? Like, what's the practice, what's the application of it, you know? So I was always sitting between those two audiences, but when you step completely away and you don't have, I guess, the comfort of an educational institute and the funding streams that you can tip into and tap into, you really have to be a lot more focused. And realizing as well, there's very, very different drivers in the really real business world, even compared to the other audiences. There's an interesting drive that you get from that. You know, sort of realizing basically, look, you might have something very interesting, very useful, but it needs to be quite immediate for a business world, because they're already rolling. You know, so there's no contemplation time.
Time is money, is it?
Exactly. Yeah, and there's a real, I suppose, gratitude when you come along and you alleviate stress and you give clarity and you boost confidence, and that turns into real outcomes, and that's excellent. Like, that's a fantastic experience to have as a provider of any service to anybody. Just realizing that is a much quicker demand in a business audience than it is in any of the other audiences. Kind of put a boot up my backside, really, in terms of what I've been doing as well. So it's been good.
Have you had a lot of support? I mean, did you when you started, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, you're by yourself.
Mm.
Did you have much support when you were starting your business? Did you use mentors or accelerators or anything like that?
Yeah, a real mix. So I was in Glasgow before I came down here, and I'd start to delve into...
It's quite an interesting startup community there, because I was there last, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there is, and there's a real evolution of in educational institutes as well, to try and push particularly PhDs, because there's huge opportunity for spin-offs and product development through PhDs, but there's a real kind of connection there. I did some enterprise training at the end of my PhD, so I was lucky enough to kind of get that concept of, right, who do I get support once I'm out there, kind of either by myself or dealing in avenues that I've never actually been up at all. So Scottish Enterprise, I'd started to look at, but then I moved down to London, so I had a look around. So there's been some really useful stuff in Terra Hamlets, and Council have offered and provided a few training programs that I've been on. So there was the NWES programs of kind of business training and stuff, and there was some grant funding that came along with that, which was really, really helpful as well. And there's a couple of mentors that I've kind of gotten out of that as well, so it's been really useful. Actually, there's probably a couple of people that I absolutely need to kind of get back in front of and chat a little bit more with, but certainly through the Chambers of Commerce here, you get loads of opportunities to sit with people. And
there's a lot of people, and you can all the different branches are great. So.
Yeah, they really are. So I've had several conversations over the last couple of days where you kind of get to validate in your head that what you're doing makes sense, or at least there's a real validity to it, and a real requirement to it. It's definitely getting the benefit of their insight into, you know, how to really keep operating in an efficient and effective mode yourself as a business. That is it's a big support, massive support, and you know, the amount of networking events and stuff that are kind of popped up from the Chambers of Commerce are really useful.
There is that small problem with networking events, and that you can go to too many of them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
not
do any work, actually.
Absolutely. And that comes right back to all the things we were just saying, like, you know, that identifying networks and networking events and so on is really about identifying the quality ones. And again, my theme of connection and connects, connecting the specific audience you're looking for, connecting what's on offer in a networking event. So it's a very, very big difference to a networking event that is just a cluster of people in a room together, staring at each other awkwardly, not knowing who's who or what to say and wondering why you're spending your evening there, versus the type of networking event you turn up to where it's very clear what's on offer in terms of maybe a delegate list ahead of time or a specific audience that's targeting, and your preparedness to be in that room and say, okay, in this fixed period of time, again, I've got the likelihood of talking to two or three people, can I identify specifically in this room the type of person that I'm looking for, and once I'm in front of them, have I got clarity of what it is that I want to present, speak about, and action has been the next kind of outcome. And again, it's a micro level of A&I in the room, but it's about just efficiency of how you spend your time. But yeah, networking events, identifying the networking events that are relevant to you, that are close to you, that are efficient in terms of your spend on them, and the real outcomes that you want from them. Two or three good conversations is much, much better than 1,000 people for a whole day and not knowing what's going to happen.
All right, so the last question is, if you go back 20 years in time and give advice to your younger self, what would that advice be?
Yeah, that's a nice one. As I said, I came from a really varied background in terms of what I did. Before public health, I was sports and exercise science, and I was very quantitative. I was very, let's look at, you know, action and effect and what we can measure in terms of, I was going to do sports injuries. But before that, I was in adventure sports management, so I was at windsurfing and sailing. But I was always interested in not just sort of doing those things for the fun of it. I was like, what's behind this? What's informs this? And why is this relevant? And what can you use these skills and so on that you're getting from them for good elsewhere? My Superman team, I don't know. So I don't think I would tell myself to do anything different, because I had an amazing time going through all of those experiences and learning from them. But I would certainly tell myself to brush up on my reading skills, because there is just so much.
Says the man with the PhD.
I know. Well, yeah. I know. But no, I mean, it's just, there is so much to take in, and that has not changed these days. Even though the format of it might be, you know, blogs are shorter than books, and headlines and tweets are shorter than letters and so on. But being able to really critically evaluate and consume reading matter in front of you, I think really edges you. And it took me a long time to realize I have a reading issue, so that was another one. But yeah, that, and I think just sort of document what you're doing as you're going, because being able to reflect on where you've kind of traveled from in any process is a hugely valuable chunk of data. So even in this mad video tech world, reading skills and documenting, being able to reflect and kind of have your own charted kind of travels, I think is really important.
That's good advice, because we do so much we forget.
Yeah.
All right, it's been great talking to you.
You too, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Interesting. Cheers.
Cheers.